mashed potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about some new films, including The Croods, A New Age, The Christmas Chronicles Part 2, Happiest Season, Hillbilly Elegy, and Mank. I'm also going to be talking about some news and the trailer park, along with the home cinema roundup featuring Sleepless Beauty. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is there's been another delay in a recent release on the schedule, and that is starting to touch January of 2021. The movie 355, which is a spy movie with Jessica Chastain, that's a group of female spies, that has been delayed until January 2022. Don't be surprised if you start seeing some of these releases getting pushed. I'm seeing movies staking out March, and I could see a March comeback, depending on how well the vaccine is distributed and how well the infections, if you can see the rates of infections going down and hospitalizations going down, and if you can get enough people who are inoculated, which, by the way, just to let you know, get inoculated, but do realize it's going to knock you out there for the first. Your body's going to build these antibodies, and you're going to feel sick, you know, right afterwards, but you won't get sick with the virus. And you got to take two doses, apparently. So this is not just like going and getting a flu shot in an afternoon and maybe having a headache later that night. But I do think that they're going to be rolling out this vaccine over the next couple months. And it actually looks like there's going to be multiple vaccines, which will be good. And hopefully the majority of people in this country, it's rolled out and it gets to enough people that we can kind of get back to a normal state. And movie theaters can start to open up again. And I think by March, you know, if things go well, by March, April, things should be at least maybe opening up, you know, the businesses as much as they can, and you can start being in crowds once again. But in the meantime, you know, all the releases in December, most of them are pushed. Most of them in January are going to get pushed, or they're going to be opening in small theatrical runs and then going right to video or right to on demand pretty quickly. You know, even stuff right now like Freaky, which had an exclusive theatrical run, and it's not making a ton of money because there's not enough theaters open widely enough, and there's not enough push for people to go back. People are being cautious, and that's okay. But the good thing does seem to be that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and hopefully we'll get back to somewhat normal, realizing that things are still going to be different. I think this has changed permanently how movies are going to be consumed by the public, the fact that there are now options for home delivery as well. The next piece of news is, and this isn't really even a huge news, it's just something that has just blown my mind. And it's about The Mandalorian, which is the TV series on Disney Plus about the bounty hunter who's got the baby Yoda, the child. It's not Yoda. It's a baby Yoda of its race or whatever. And in the second season, which is slowly being released week by week by Disney, The Mandalorian has to take this child to find the lost Jedi, and this takes place after Return of the Jedi, so it's not just Luke that is back. They're trying to find the hidden Jedi. And throughout the series, of course, everyone loves Baby Yoda, but there was something that happened a couple weeks ago that made the internet lose its mind. And I find it interesting the amount of hand-wringing that goes on to fictional characters. This frog lady, this frog alien had she had eggs that she needed to fertilize. She needed to bring them to another planet to find her mate, and they needed to fertilize the eggs. And as I understand, it's just the end of their bloodline. She needed to have the eggs fertilized so they could carry on their bloodline, not their species. And that's important. And throughout the episode, Baby Yoda, who's known for eating in like every single episode, the Baby Yoda, you know, ate a couple of the eggs, and it became very funny, and it's kind of dark, but people got really upset and this has been a theme throughout the series, you don't know how good or bad the show is, because the Baby Yoda force choked somebody in the first season, which is not a Jedi thing to do. I, of course, take it as saying it's a child. It's a baby that doesn't necessarily know right from wrong. And even though it's 50 years old, it has a long, long, long lifespan, because Yoda was almost 1,000 when he dies in Return of the Jedi. Spoiler alert, in Return of the Jedi, Yoda dies. And so it's learning right from wrong, and it's adorable and wonderful. But if anybody who's had a kid knows, kids don't always do the right thing. That's the purpose of being a parent. And sometimes kids do absolutely the wrong thing. The kids are very hedonistic. They're very much into just them, because that's how they grow up. They got to scream and cry until you take care of them. And it's part of growing up, and it's part of being a child, and it's part of having a good parent to teach the kid right from wrong. And that's part of what's happening here. And I thought that that was really some neat characterization, and people just lost their mind over it. He didn't eat all the eggs. They were able to fertilize the eggs. There were just fewer eggs. So people are losing their mind over something that's happening with fictional characters. If you want to get upset with stuff that's happening to real people in the world and become an activist that way. You don't need to become an activist to stop Baby Yoda from eating something. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one is Let Them All Talk, which is on HBO Max on December 10th.
Alice has a manuscript that's due really soon. Everyone at the agency is getting a bit nervous. I mean, I haven't seen a manuscript. Have you seen the manuscript?
I have not seen a manuscript.
For years now, she's been hinting that she's revisiting one of her characters. So I've booked her on the Queen Mary 2 with her two friends and her nephew.
Here's to picking up the conversation where we left off.
You believe Alice and her book determined your whole life?
The consequences on my life of her actions were unacceptable.
This is the new film by Steven Soderbergh. I think it's interesting because last year he had a new film on Netflix, which was The Laundromat, which wasn't a great film, but it showed how many, you know, big name directors are taking the chance to pivot into the streaming options. This one stars Meryl Streep along with Candace Bergen and Diane Wiest. And it looks like it's a story of a woman who's a writer, and she borrowed a little bit from her friends in real life, and it affected them, and it's her having to sort of make peace with that in her later years. So it looks like it's got a good cast, and of course you got a good director behind it. Soderbergh blows hot or cold. Some of his movies are fantastic, some of his movies are kind of lame. Some of his movies are sort of a mixed bag. The Laundromat last year was kind of a mixed bag. I just think it's interesting that it's going straight to HBO Max. It was probably going to have a theatrical run, but it was something that they pivoted towards an on-demand release with the pandemic. The next one I want to hit is Pieces of a Woman, which will get a theatrical run at the end of the year, December 30th. For award consideration, but it's going to be hitting Netflix, I believe, on January 7th.
She sounds really good.
Hi, baby.
My daughter came into this world for the time that she did.
And I can't bring her back.
60 to 70% of these cases, we rarely find a satisfactory explanation. Certain things medically we just don't have answers for.
Have you decided to go to the trial?
That's the right thing to do, honey.
Because you say it is.
We need some justice here.
No, you need.
Now, this one is about a couple who are going to have a kid, and the kid dies in childbirth, and it's the aftermath of that. The guilt that they feel, and the anger that they feel, and the unresolved emotions, and how it affects their relationship, and the possibility of having some sort of litigation for the midwife who was involved in this. It's an award season movie. It's heavy. It's a drama. It looks like it's going to be wringing the emotions pretty heavily. So, you know, it's not going to be for everybody. If you just want something to escape, certainly does not look like a movie that you're going to be able to escape anything with. In fact, you're probably going to be more burdened by life after this movie than before. But for people who love that sort of thing, that is going to be coming to Netflix. And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Happiest Season and The Christmas Chronicles Part 2. guys at the movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. And we're going to be doing a little bit of Christmas stuff. I know. It's still Thanksgiving weekend. We're still dealing with Turkey Day stuff. I'm still full. Well, but here's my trick. Just don't stop eating. You don't want to have a food coma? Don't stop eating. Just keep eating. It'll wake you up. It hurts and you'll rupture something, but that's the glory of Thanksgiving weekend. Anyways, we're going to talk about some Christmas movies now. I mean, I talked about the Christmas Chronicles, the first one, last week in the Home Cinema Roundup section, but this is new this week. These actually dropped before Thanksgiving. Let's talk about the Christmas Chronicles Part 2 first. Kurt Russell returns as Santa Claus, who gets help from two teenagers to save Christmas when a wayward elf tries to destroy the holiday.
Welcome to the North Pole!
Santa!
Kate Pierce!
How did you get here? You and Jack are supposed to be on vacation with your family.
Our shuttle fell into this wormhole.
Have a nice trip.
What is that?
That is the Christmas Star. The star protects us and keeps us hidden.
And I'm here to steal it. I'm gonna make everybody forget that the North Pole and Santa Claus ever existed.
Belschnickel.
Now, the first thing you'll notice, it's in there right at the end of the trailer, is they talk about Belschnickel. For those who don't know who Belschnickel is, it's actually a part of the story of Santa Claus. And if you've heard the name Belschnickel before, it is because you probably watched The Office. Dwight Schrute once dressed as Belschnickel, who chooses whether you're impish or admirable instead of dressing as Santa Claus for a holiday party at Dunder Mifflin. Belschnickel is like a Krampus type character. It's not full on Krampus, but it is that character of the naughty kids. and I think that's great that they're doing something with the Belschnickel character in this movie. And one of the things I thought was interesting about this episode of the Christmas Chronicles is overall, you know, the story's, it's formula. And I think I said this when I talked about the first Christmas Chronicles last week, when it comes to like romantic comedies and some horror movies and Christmas movies, you want the formula. You don't want to shake it up too much. You want that corny, cheesy, holiday friendly family formula. You know, it's nice to have something that thinks outside of the box and is different, but it's okay to have something that leans into the cliche a bit, and that works for Christmas. But one of the things they do in this one is they enrich the story more. Not only do they actually travel to the North Pole and spend some time there, and we've seen that in movies like the Santa Claus movies or even the Polar Express. I really missed that in the first Christmas Chronicles. I wanted something like that in that first one, and so they enrich the universe. But the other thing they do is they give Santa Claus more of his history, you know, and delves into some medieval and Middle Eastern elements that you have the origin of Santa Claus in there. And I think that that's really kind of cool that they decide to go there. And that's why putting Belschnickel in there, even though it's a candy cane version of Belschnickel, they add to it. They draw from the history of Santa Claus, and that really makes it work. And of course, you know, Kurt Russell plays a great Santa Claus. He really does. He looks the part, but he still has a little bit of grit to him. He's still what you'd consider somebody being hefty and doing the thing for Christmas. And it's nice to see Goldie Hawn getting a little bit more role in this one. She's got some more stuff happening. It's a cute little movie. If you like that first one, you'll like this one. I think it goes a little bit farther and does a little bit more stuff. So I have to say it's a great little holiday movie, and it's, I think, destined to become a classic. I'm going to say The Christmas Chronicles Part 2 rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
The next one I want to talk about is Happiest Season. A young woman visits her girlfriend's family for the first time on Christmas and finds herself having to hide their relationship.
You and Harper have a perfect relationship.
She is my person, and I really want everyone to know that. I want to marry her.
I'm so excited. I can't believe I'm finally going to meet everyone.
There's something that we should talk about. I didn't tell my parents I'm gay.
So who do they think I am?
This is Harper's orphan friend, Abby.
Yes, of course. They're there.
You're so brave.
Just be yourself.
But don't lie. You're a very bad liar.
I can relate to being in love with somebody that is too afraid to show the world who they are.
This one was going to come to theaters, but it ended up pivoting to Hulu. Kind of like as I talked about last week with Run. It stars Kristen Stewart as the main character, and her girlfriend is played by Mackenzie Davis. The big twist to this one is there are two women in this relationship. And Mackenzie Davis's character brings her home to her family, but then doesn't tell her until they're showing up that she's not come out to her parents and that she has to pretend to not be her girlfriend. Kristen Stewart's character is feeling like she's being hidden. And she has an interesting side character. She got Daniel Levy, who's best known for Schitt's Creek. He's really great in that series, and there's a tenderness there that he brings into this movie. And while he is just her best friend, it's weird having the gay best friend in a lesbian movie, but he is there. He is her best friend. And he is someone that she's allowed to bounce things off of because she calls him during this whole ordeal. The whole thing is the Mackenzie Davis's character has a family that's, the father's a politician and the mother is a socialite. And then she's got, two sisters who each have their own sort of idiosyncrasies. And the fact that she's also got a history of not allowing anyone to know that she's gay. There's this ex-girlfriend of hers played by Aubrey Plaza in the movie that is a fly in the ointment. And she has a history with the character, and the character dismisses her at some point in their history. And it's clear that this girl has a lot of issues with her family. But here's my problem with it. And I understand the LGBT community embraces this, of course, because it's actually just a normal romance, only it's two women instead of a man and a woman. But my issue with it is outside of the LGBT element. And I know that there's this whole element of coming out to your family that is addressed. And there's a wonderful scene in there where Daniel Levy's character and Kristen Stewart's character have this discussion. They say, you know, coming out is not easy. There are some families that are very supportive, but there are some families that plain old kick out. And there are people who lose families over who they are. And that's a horrible thing. And it still happens to this day. And that's the burden that the character of Hannah, played by Mackenzie Davis, is going through. And while I thought that that was a beautiful scene and that opens up something that every gay person has had to deal with in their life and every straight person has no idea what this is like, I still had an issue with this movie because I thought that the hangups that the character had, the Mackenzie Davis character had, I thought that those superseded her sexuality. It wasn't just that she was a lesbian. It's, she is dealing with images and stuff like that, that have nothing to do with who she is. There are deep seated problems with this family that are clearly causing problems for everybody. And it makes her the epicenter of a toxic relationship. And that's why I didn't like that part. It ties things up a little bit too nice because it's a Christmas movie. But in reality, this was a damaged individual who has serious problems that go beyond not wanting to come out of the closet to her parents. And that's why I had an issue, because I'm like, gay or straight, this girl has issues that are well unresolved into her 30s. So that was my issue with Happy Seasons, but that's me overthinking it. On the whole, it's a pretty sweet little romantic comedy for Christmas. So I'm going to have to say it does kind of rock.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Croods, A New Age, and Hillbilly Elegy. At the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with The Croods, A New Age. The Croods caveman family runs into a more advanced family who can show them a better life, which still has consequences.
Dad always says the pack stays together. Now we're searching for a perfect place to call home.
I thought cave people died off years ago. We are the Bettermans.
Better man?
Emphasis on the better.
Is that your home?
Kind of big, isn't it? What's your problem, big guy?
This place is changing everyone.
You're not allowed outside the wall?
Nope.
This farm is like your cave. You're just like me.
I cannot believe it's been 7 years since the first The Croods came out. I remember when it came out, I thought it was a cute little movie, but I remember it came out the same year as Iron Man 3. That is how long it's been. And it's not uncommon for animated films to have a much longer production schedule. And sometimes it's like a movie like The Croods. I think they just made it as a throwaway movie. I mean, they were ready to do more stuff. They always are. Every movie in Hollywood is planned with a potential sequel. But this wasn't like the Star Wars movies or the Marvel movies where they're ready to kind of just roll it into the next thing. And so the movie did arguably pretty well. It was a nice little movie. It was an animated film that wasn't like breaking the bank. It didn't have a huge budget. It reminds me a little bit of the Trolls films where they released the Troll movie and it did okay. And so then they made a sequel. And so they did The Croods and it did okay. And so they're now they're making a sequel and it just took them 7 years to do it. It's been so long that I think this was the last big movie that Nicolas Cage was in. This was the last huge movie for him. The movie itself, it's sort of like I said, it's like the Trolls movie or the Ice Age movies, really, where the Ice Age movies dealt with all of the weird, crazy prehistoric elements to it. You can have crazy animals and in the Ice Age movies, they tried to actually make real animals. This one, they don't. They're insane, crazy creatures that do not exist in nature. They end up running into this family that, if you remember the Ryan Reynolds character from the first movie, he ends up meeting and falling in love with the girl in The Croods, but he seems to be a little more advanced. They're all very almost Neanderthal, and he seems to be more Homo sapien. And they run into not his family, but people he knew. And they're voiced by Leslie Mann and Peter Dinklage. And you got Kelly Marie Tran in there as her daughter. And there's sort of this conflict between the cavemen Croods and the Bettermans. But they can irrigate soil and they can grow and farm fruits and vegetables. And they've built a treehouse. They don't just live in a cave. And they have more quote-unquote modern abilities. They're a notch below the Flintstones. So it's maybe like the Flintstones meeting the prehistoric Flintstones. They haven't quite developed a society yet. They just have their own people. Kelly Marie Tran plays their daughter. And of course there's where the conflict is the daughter wants the Ryan Reynolds character and they want the Ryan Reynolds character for their daughter, but he has a relationship with a crude girl. Look, this is a harmless, sweet, fluffy movie that is completely forgettable. It's wonderful to see. It's very vibrant and colorful, and it's got great action sequences, and it's not nearly forced as much as some animated sequels are. Like, if you go back to those Ice Age movies I was talking about, the Ice Age movies really, really force the story. This one doesn't feel forced. It feels somewhat organic, and the creatures that they're running into, it's colorful and wacky and crazy, and you get to see a lot of cool stuff. I would not call this a brilliant movie, though. I would not call it, a must-see, but it certainly is fun. If your kids like the first Croods movie, take them to see this. It's a nice little escape, and it's got all the stuff you expect from a movie. It's got a little lesson, it's got colorful characters, it's got fart jokes in there. It's got everything that a kid's like in an animated movie. I don't know if it's the beginning and end of cinema, but that's okay. It's still fun to watch. So I'm going to have to say The Croods kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Hillbilly Elegy. A kid from the hills of Kentucky and Ohio has to return home from college when his mother has a drug relapse.
I've been doing real good. I just had a down month.
I got an interview tomorrow, Mom. Otherwise,
Oh, you know me. I always land on my feet.
You let her get away with this every time.
I told you that I would do better.
You always say that. You're lying.
I always try.
You got to think about these kids.
What do you think I've been thinking about since I was 18 years old, huh? Never had a life where I wasn't thinking about the kids.
Do you actually want to be dead, Mom? Or are you just too lazy to try?
This is directed by Ron Howard, and it is his attempt at award films this year. It's actually been out for a couple weeks in limited release in theaters, so you may have seen it if you've been finding the right theaters in town. But it finally released on Netflix this Wednesday, and so if you've got the service, you can watch it essentially for free. It's based on a book, and it's a true story about this kid, and he grew up, he lived in Ohio, which in this area that's, I think it's midway between Dayton and Cincinnati. I think I've been there, actually, because it's not far from where I live. But his family's from Kentucky, from the hills of Kentucky. And look, anybody who lives in Ohio pretty much has hillbilly friends and hillbilly relatives. I got my own hillbilly relatives out near Uniontown, Pennsylvania. If you know West Virginia, that's where my people come from, at least a section of my family tree. And it's a different world out there. It really is. And there's a different culture out there. It's very different than living in a big city or a suburb where I grew up. Neither good nor bad. It's just different. And there's good things and bad things about, you know, your hillbilly family. And this is this kid feeling very tied to his hillbilly family. I can use that term because I got hillbilly relatives. But they use that term in the movie, even though hillbilly, redneck, that kind of stuff is they of course consider that derogatory, which it is. You know, I mean, derogatory terms are not just for people who you expect to get upset at derogatory terms. But that's the name of the movie, and he sort of leans into that stereotype a little bit. It's got a great cast. You've got Amy Adams as the mom. You've got Glenn Close, who's in a transformative performance as the grandmother. And what's funny is I started doing the math because, I mean, Glenn Close looks like she's a billion years old in this movie. And I'm like, wait a minute. Her character's only a couple years older than me. She really looks old for being in her 50s. And then they show clips at the end of the movie where they show pictures of the real people and like video clips and film clips. And no, she looked that old. It's rough living sometimes when you're surviving on cigarettes and Meals on Wheels. And it shows the bonds that you have in a family. I think there's a lot of truth in there, in that there are very strong bonds, in a family of, you know, and like I said, from culturally, that's very true. The biggest problem I have with it is every single scene of this movie is an Oscar clip for somebody. And it gets a little heavy at a certain point. They really lay it on thick, and as good of a performance as Amy Adams has in it. It's just at some point I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. You want your Oscar this year, but I don't know. It just seems very heavy-handed in that way. The entire movie is about buttons getting pushed rather than telling a story. And there are certain things in the movie that you can be very judgmental, and I get to be very judgmental. Like I said, I got hillbilly relatives. It's an interesting look at American families from the salt of the earth and the struggles that they go through. Now, as I understand it, the original book deals with a little bit more of the societal issues and politics of the area. And I think that has an interesting thing to say about the greater political scheme, but they really don't cover that in this movie. The movie itself is more about the internal struggles of this family. Like I said, it's not just a movie that pushes buttons. It's a movie about pushing buttons. But let's put it this way. Look, if you've had your distance Thanksgiving, if you were doing small group gatherings and then connecting with people via Zoom because you couldn't have 15 or 20 people over to your house and you're being responsible over the weekend and you missed the family fights at dinner, you can watch Hillbilly Elegy and watch those fights happen on TV. So if you missed all that family infighting and yelling at each other, you could just watch this movie again. Anyways, I'm not sold on the movie. I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mank and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Sleepless Beauty. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up with the movie reviews and talk about Mank. David Fincher directs this stylized tale about Herman Mankiewicz and how he wrote the screenplay for Citizen Kane.
Hello, everyone.
Make yourself to home, Mr. Mankiewicz, or shall I call you Herman?
Please, call me Mank.
New York playwright and drama critic
turned humble screenwriter, Mr. Hearst.
This is a business where the buyer gets nothing for his money but a memory. What he bought still belongs to the man who sold it. That's the real magic of the movies.
I hear you're hunting dangerous game.
God bless William Randolph Hearst.
Ready and willing to hunt the great white whale?
Just call me Ahab.
First of all, where you can find this movie. It is currently playing in theaters in limited release, just as Netflix has been doing lately with its movies. They started doing this last year with Marriage Story and The Irishman, where they had limited release in theaters, and then they dropped it onto the service a little bit later. This hits the service next week. So if you want, if you're itching to see this movie and you don't have a theater nearby where you can see it, you just wait till next week and you can watch the movie for free on Netflix. Now, this is about Citizen Kane, and I have a confession to make. I don't think Citizen Kane's that great of a movie. It is a great movie, and it is monumentous in the steps it took in narrative storytelling. I'm going to compare it to a movie I talked about a couple of years ago, which was Birth of a Nation, and not in the sense that, you know, this isn't a racist movie like Birth of a Nation is. But when you watch Birth of a Nation, part of what makes that movie so monumental is it went from a very static type of movie for silent films, where they just filmed on this set where you just see the three walls, to intercutting scenes and taking action outside and placement of the camera. There was a lot of stuff that they did in Birth of a Nation that really propelled filmmaking, regardless of its racist undertones and overtones in the movie. Birth of a Nation lives today and hasn't fallen into obscurity because of how it grew motion pictures as a whole, regardless of the racism of the movie. And you can say the same thing with Citizen Kane, even if you're not a big fan of the movie. I'm not a huge fan. I've seen it a couple times, and yes, I think it's a well-made movie. I don't consider it the greatest movie ever made. I think there's some people who just are afraid to admit that you can go bigger than Citizen Kane, just as Star Wars innovated special effects. This movie innovated close-ups and narrative storytelling and opticals and the way to shoot a movie. So I just want to throw that out there. I'm not one of those people who just completely gushes over Citizen Kane. With that said, I think this is a very interesting movie. I'm always skeptical of movies about movies. I've always found that movies are more interesting than the movies about movies. There are some films that are different, like American Movie, which is a documentary about this guy in Wisconsin just desperately trying to make this movie. That's a fascinating movie because it looks more at the life of the independent filmmaker. But the movies about movies, like remember the movie Hitchcock a couple years ago with Anthony Hopkins playing Alfred Hitchcock? That movie was interesting, but I thought Hitchcock's movies are more interesting than that movie was. You know, biopics are interesting, but movies about filmmakers, you know, something like Ed Wood, I think, is interesting because you're profiling somebody who was at least at the time not well known and had that sort of grit and determination of the independent filmmaker. But the studio system, you know, like when they had that movie Judy last year with Renee Zellweger, that was interesting. But, you know, just the background of the movies, you just have this look of like how sleazy movie making can be, and you get all the same characters over and over and over again. Now, what I found fascinating about Mank was the fact that he shot it like Citizen Kane. He shot it in black and white, and it was like this 40s movie. I wish he had gone a little farther, David Fincher, and used more of the techniques from the 40s, because while it has a look of the 40s, some of the technique quite doesn't get there. They don't have the same saturation of light because they weren't using that old film stock from the 40s. You didn't have the blowing out of the light, and you didn't have as stark of contrast. He still moves the camera more than they did in the 40s. And he really could have done some neat stuff to really tie it into the elements of Citizen Kane in terms of the filmmaking elements. And he does it to a degree, but not as much as he could. Gary Oldman plays Mank, and he does a great job. It's a great performance by him, and it's got a great cast, and it really sheds light into why this movie was made. And Orson Welles plays such a minor role in this movie. I think that's deliberate, because Orson Welles played a relatively minor role in developing the script, even though he won an Oscar for it. So overall, I mean, it's a neat look at Hollywood history, and it's a neat look at behind the scenes of Citizen Kane, where usually something about Citizen Kane focuses on Wells. This one doesn't. And there's some neat filmmaking elements to it. But at the same time, it's kind of like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where last year that was Quentin Tarantino playing in his own little sandbox. This is David Fincher playing in his own little sandbox to a degree. It runs a little long, and it does sort of retread a lot of the ground, even though it's a neat movie. But I'm still going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The feature I want to spotlight this week is called Sleeping Beauty. A woman is kidnapped and forced to undergo torture without sleep for days on end.
Welcome to recreation. Here are some things for you to remember. The main rule of recreation is sleeping is prohibited.
I can't watch it anymore. I don't know where I am. Hello?
I'm not sleeping.
This is a Russian movie, and there have been some real innovations in Russian genre filmmaking. I'm not talking about, you know, serious filmmaking. Like, they had that movie Leviathan a couple years ago that was a drama. And yeah, Russian filmmaking's fine there, but they're doing some neat stuff with their genre pieces. They had that movie Sputnik a couple months ago about this alien, and it was a full-blown Russian movie from a Russian perspective, but it was neat and different. And I've seen some action movies that are Russian. So I think they're doing some cool stuff now that they're not trying to, you know, work with propaganda or anything. And this movie, I don't think is terribly innovative, because a good chunk of it just feels like it's playing off of, you know, the Saw hostile torture porn that was popular 15 years ago. Even though there's a little bit more to it, I wish that they delved more into the backstory. Most of this movie is the dire circumstances this woman has to undergo. And as distressing as that is, it's not as compelling of a movie as the motivations of the people. You know, they'll go for 20 minutes with the stuff that this woman's suffering, which can be unpleasant. And then they kind of cut to the investigation to find her and what the people behind the scenes are doing. And I'm like, that's the interesting stuff. And they really take forever to get to that point. And that's the money. That's where I think this movie shines. And they spend just too much time in the very easy moments, which I can understand budgetary reasons. It mostly takes place in a room and it's more expensive to shoot elsewhere. So I think there's some great stuff in this movie. It just takes a little bit too long to get there. It feels like it's, you know, a 40-minute movie that has the first 20 minutes has been padded out to make it a feature length. Now, the Blu-ray itself comes with a couple elements to it. It's got a behind-the-scenes documentary. It's got the deleted scenes, alternate scene, and then, of course, some trailers. I'm really on the fence because there's elements to it I liked, but there's also elements to it that I thought got tedious and overblown. I'm going to be nice, though, because I think anything that's new and different and trying to break some molds can be worthwhile. So I'm going to say Sleepless Beauty kind of rocks, but it's got a little asterisk next to it that says, tread cautiously. Don't just go jumping at this because it's got a cool title. It is at very basic for a good chunk of the movie, and I was hoping for something more. But still, I'm going to say trepidatiously, it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available this week on disc includes the Criterion edition of The Irishman, The Train to Busan Peninsula, which is the sequel, in 4K, Mad Max in 4K, the original, Ava, Better Call Saul Season 5, and Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, the complete collection on Blu-ray of the Gil Gerard TV show from the 80s. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Half Brothers, Black Bear, and Dear Santa. Until then, enjoy your Turkey Day weekend and have a fat time at the movies or at home.